Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Ron, how are you this morning?
I am doing great, Mikey. David, how are you boys doing?
Doing well, Coom.
You know, it's fun in a way because, as you know, our resident producer here, Dustin Rhodes, lives and dies on a regular basis with the Cubs. And he was as despondent as I've seen him after the first two games of this series. And today, he's singing songs. He's skipping in the hallways.
He's facing better again now.
Oh yeah. The world has been righted in Dustin's eyes.
I love it, D.
See, but Ron, I mean, it really has been righted. You know, you go 20, you lose two games, then you shut them out for 22 innings. You get a great outing. To set up the return of Shota, and he was everything you hoped he would be. He was the guy. It was like he never hurt a hamstring. He was fantastic yesterday.
He really was. I think the whole thing is set up by Boyd's outing.
Right.
You know, when there's sometimes, you know, Mike, when you really, you know, you really need a good outing from your starting pitcher. That was one of those days, the game three of that series. And Matthew came out there and, you know, he's got a unique fastball. That his two seamer at the top of the zone that runs across the zone away from the righties into the lefties. He's got to have, you know, they don't pick it up. There's got to be some deception and then he can run it inside. But he just, you know, I don't know if there were too many hard hit balls the whole game against him in six innings, maybe one or two that they barreled up. And then Shota, as you said, came out. I had a chance to talk to him yesterday as we got here into Houston. And I asked him, I go, how's the leg? Oh, it's good. You know, you had a great fastball. Yeah, good fastball yesterday. He had a good fastball to the righties inside. He wasn't overly thrilled about his split. And the movement of his split was going more sideways than it was down. So that'll be something he'll work on. But he was like, yeah, hold on. And you don't see many guys spend 2 months on the injured list, pitchers in particular, starting pitchers, and come back and be just as sharp as the day they left. That was amazing to me.
So, Ron, have to ask you, because of the way we came into this segment, the disgust in your voice was obvious. Wilson Contreras is somebody that has triggered you before, and he might trigger you again as early as next week.
Oh,
but
I'm sure of it.
How do you explain what happened, the little brouhaha, as we have called it, at the end of the game? And Daniel Palencia, did he go too far? I just thought it was his emotions, and it was fine, and it was just the way that most closers will celebrate after a save that dramatic.
Yeah, I think Daniel, at the end of the day, was reacting to multiple things. One, a big save against Cardinals, and then also Wilson chirping at him from first base the whole time he was at first. He was chirping. So, you know, and then, you know, and for a young guy, then it's like, okay, it's time to shut up. I shut you up, you know. They get it. The thing is, I get that Wilson got upset immediately after getting hit by a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. That just happens. I mean, you get, like, raging mad instantly because a guy's throwing a projectile at you and hits you at 100 miles an hour.
It hurts.
But then once you're – yeah, it hurts. It hurts a lot. But once your brain and the logic of, you know, using your brain kicks in, you go, well, they just brought the tying run to the plate. They don't want to do that. So you put your head down and you walk to first base and shake it off. The pain, but you know that they're not doing that on purpose. You know what I mean? So I understood that, but he can't, that last step doesn't happen all the time. And he gets, you know, he lets his emotions take over and it just continues to take over. And even Burleson, who was standing on second base, is like, Wilson, calm down. He's giving him the old hands down, like, relax. you know, you're going to get picked off first base and the game's going to be over. And I even said that on the air. I'm like, I was hoping Michael Bush would back pick him from the pitcher because Wilson was so hot that he just wasn't in right frame of mind to be running the bases. But they didn't, and it ended up Daniel got the strikeout, and that worked out great.
And I don't say this lightly, but I wonder, are you doing yourself a disservice by showing that sort of out-of-control emotion? Because if I'm in a tight game and I know something's going, if you accidentally hit him or if you throw at him, you know the guy's going to lose his stuff. I'm just saying that's not a message I would want to send out to Major League Baseball.
Correct, 100%. We all have been there where we lose it a little bit, and you gotta get it back, I guess. Here's the example. Ohtani got hit in Los Angeles last week when they were playing the Padres, and it was going back and forth with the beanballs.
Right.
In the last one, the dugout, they're jumping over the railing of the dugout, his team, to protect him, and he waves them back, go back to the dugout. Let's let this be over. Done. Okay, we're done. So, you know, I don't know if I could have quite been Ohtani in that situation.
That's a great comparison, Coombe. That's a great contrast.
But that's the thing that you go, okay, this has got to be over because this isn't good for our – if you're the best team, that's not good for your team getting drilled all the time and drilling them. That's not good. You know, so that's the difference.
So let's go back a couple nights. We had a lot of conversation about Pete Crow Armstrong – and his just mental mistake in center field when he thought that there was three outs and he did a little pirouette and runner scored from second base. And then later in the game, I feel like it was an even maybe a worse decision to bunt with runners on first and third in that situation when you are the cleanup hitter. How did you think the Cubs handled that with Craig Counsell? He said he texted him after the game but didn't really make a big deal about it. There are some managers who might have made a bigger deal about it. What did you think about the way the Cubs handled it?
I thought it was fine. I got no problem with what Counts did. I think Counts does a pretty good job of understanding his players. And you know, at the end of the day, you really need Pete Crow Armstrong to play great baseball. So the last thing you want to do is be, you know, old school crusty manager and rip him a little bit, you know. So and then have him go down, and his confidence go down, and we're seeing his confidence down, right? I mean, he's doing it to himself. We saw that yesterday's the last two ball games since that's happened. You know, he's beating himself up over some of this and trying to do a little too much, and you know that's one of those things, and that's him. You know, you're going to have that. I don't think you have to do much to Pete as far as, you know, getting on him at all. I think he's a young guy that wants to succeed so bad and be great that he's one of those guys you got to constantly try to make sure that he's up and playing with confidence and kind of in that positive frame of mind. Because, you know, I've seen it the last few days. He's just beating himself up over a few plays. And in 162 games, we're going to have some bad days. It's just the way it is. You got to turn the page.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Ron Coomer on The Score is sponsored by Huntington, home of early pay. More at Huntington.com/your money. I'm curious, Ron, when you think of Kyle Tucker back in Houston, what does that say to you? Do you have a little something else? Do you have a little extra oomph when you're going against a team that you one time played for? Is it not sort of a natural way to feel about things?
I'm glad they traded them to us and we're here. Put it that way. I got traded from the White Sox to the Dodgers, and I hit more home runs against the White Sox than any other team in baseball. So that would be an absolute yes. I think it's just human nature, right? I mean, we all, you know, and he was a star player here and kind of, you know, made his way in the league here in Houston, and, you know, they traded him away. So, you know, I would, and I love the fact that he's, you know, somewhat rested, counts as getting him some days where he's DHing instead of, you know, playing right field. So you're giving him a little mental break somewhat. So I think he's pretty rested. And when he's rested, you see his bat come alive. I expect him to have a really good series this weekend.
Yeah, I think it's fun to compare his numbers with Paredes because they're more similar than you would expect. But I also think, Coom, looking at this weekend in terms of player-to-player comparisons, you look at Cam Smith and Matt Shaw, and you wonder about one versus the other, and you wonder which guy the Astros wanted first in those conversations about trade talks. And as it pertains to Matt Shaw, what's been going wrong with him, and how can he fix it?
He, you know, for Matty, I think he's got some things going on in his swing. When you watch him at the plate, he's having a lot of, there's a lot of movement with his head. There's, you know, he's getting back to some of that. And when your head is moving, and what I mean by that is your head is moving towards the pitcher, you're not seeing the baseball and you're not recognizing the pitch early enough. So we're seeing a lot of inside pitches that he's flinching and coming back to the strikes. And, you know, that just tells me that he's not picking up the ball real well. And then his swings are, you know, you're having the result that he's having. You know, he's getting jammed a lot. So he just, you know, there's got to be, there's every hitter has these checks and balances in their game and in their stroke. And for him, his first and foremost is keeping his head still so he can recognize the pitch. It sounds very easy, but it is not. And he is dealing with some of that now. I just see a lot of check swings, a lot of half, you know, flinch and then falling off the plate, you know, because he thinks the ball's inside and it's, you know, it's not. So he's got to quiet that head down a little bit. And if he can do that, you know, when he does that, then his swing is okay. He had a couple swings yesterday that were very good. So, you know, those are some of the things he's got to work at.
So we saw two excellently pitched games, and now here you go into Houston. Cade Horton is going to pitch tonight. Colin Ray has something to prove maybe on Saturday. And Jameson Taillon, he bounces back pretty well, but he needs a bounce back on Sunday. What are you expecting from the pitching staff in this series?
Well, you hope that you get a great pitch series for the Cubs. I do believe, you know, like today now, power arms in this ballpark usually do pretty good. It's the guys that have, you know, that are trying to pitch around the ballpark, so to speak, because of the short porch is left. You know, you can make some mistakes and then they get you. And this team, you know, some of their hitters really know how to use that short porch and left, like the hitters used to and still do, I'm sure. I just don't see it as much in Fenway Park. So, you know, Cade tonight, he's got to be on the attack with his heater. And if he is, that's a great thing. And I expect J-Mo also to come back. Colin, to me, it's all about his fastball command. But J-Mo's an extreme guy that has to have great command. And he does, usually. He's had last couple, it has not been perfect command. He's left some balls in the middle of the plate, and he's paid the price for them. But there were six starts in a row, six or seven, that he went six-plus. And was just outstanding. So, you know, it's a slight correction for him, and hopefully he'll make that correction and get back on that streak he was on.
Coom, you're so good at answering hitting questions. I have to ask you about Michael Busch. I think he is a guy who, when you look at his numbers alone, you think, well, he's making an all-star run. This is a guy who's coming into his own, and you start ranking Cub hitters, and you don't go too far down the list until you get to Michael Busch. And then I stopped myself because then I realized they don't trust him against left-handed hitting or pitchers because he's only got like 36 at bats against lefties. I know he's only hitting 111, but how do you get better at something when you're not allowed to try to do it more often? And this is a guy that is an all-star caliber first baseman. So how do you explain and understand how they're treating Michael Busch with left-handers?
Well, it's to me, the idea of him hitting against left-handers, that's going to come. He's going to eventually do it. But that's not how the team was set up, David. The team was set up, you signed a high-profile winner in Justin Turner, and he was the guy that was going to play against left-handed pitching somehow, some way. Well, the way the team is set up right now, he's got to play first base, and that's where he's going to play. So that's, you know, you made that decision with him in spring training, and, you know, I don't know, you know, he has had his struggles this season, so how long that will last is to be determined. But at the end of the day, I just say celebrate with what Bushy's doing. He's the perfect guy to look at and go, he got an opportunity. He got traded from the Dodgers here. He got an opportunity, which is like getting a gold bar, to say, we're going to give you a chance to be a starting player in the big leagues. And let's see what you do with it. And what did he do with it? He ran with it like as good as you could possibly do. He worked his butt off at first base, and I watched it day after day after day from my booth. With his work at first, now he's become a really good defensive first baseman. And he's doing the same thing with his swing, and he's covering pitches and hitting the ball out of the ballpark. And I'm really happy for him. It just goes to show you, some guys, they work hard, and the hard work is paying off. I love his whole story and what he has done for the Cubs. It's just a great way to show your young kids, this, if you do this, good things can happen. That's the Michael Busch story.
I'm really wondering if Jed, being as forthright as he's been, he's done interviews all over the place, and he's talked about needing a starting pitcher and seeking a starting pitcher. There have been reports that Mitch Keller is the guy that they're talking about, that they've been talking to Pittsburgh about him. Do you follow that sort of thing? Do players in the locker room hear all those rumors as they're going on? I'm just wondering, what does the transparency mean to the team?
I would say guys hear it, because a lot of times you don't have a choice. You know, there's, you know, as you guys know, there's a lot of people in the clubhouse, and there's a lot of questions being asked, and then there's social media and all the ways you can, you know, get on a computer, and then you see what's being said and or hear what's being said, and you know, so you hear it. But I would hope, you know, I did not play in this era of all this, the ability to get all this information, you know, constantly about what's being said. I would hope, Mike, that guys would not read it too much and just stay away from it and concentrate on, when you look in the mirror, on that guy. You know, that's the best thing you can do as a player, is concentrate on being a good winning teammate, and concentrate on your game and that guy in the mirror that you look at. That's the best thing you can do to help your team, is make sure you're covering yourself and doing what you're supposed to do, help your team win, and let the noise kind of be noise. It's easy to say. It's not easy to do, but some guys do a better job of it than others. But that was my way of just, you know what? If I do my job real well, I'm going to be just fine. That's what I would do.
Great stuff, Ron. Always a joy. Appreciate your time. Have a great weekend in Houston.
Yeah, enjoy the city.
We will, and you guys have a great weekend, too. Great to talk to you. Dust, we're back.
He's raising his fist in support and not shaking them at you.
No.
Right, exactly.
He's a happier man today.
Yes,
Great stuff.
That's good stuff. See
Thanks,
you,
Rod. God bless.
Thanks, Ron.
That is our guy, Ron Coomer.
Dustin is hilarious. More Palencia than Contreras right now.
There you go.
Pounding his chest. Sweating.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.